Thank you, those that have read, that's helped us open the meeting, and take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. A very warm welcome to any visitors with us today, and a massive welcome to anyone that might be new to Narcotics Anonymous with us. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. Okay, so like we said at the beginning, we are a speaker meeting. We do have a speaker tonight, I'm delighted to say, who's going to share their experience and hope with us 40, 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with. And I'm going to hand you over the journey two into and through Narcotics Anonymous. I'm going to hand you over to Helen, who's going to introduce it. So over to you, Helen.
Thank you, Steve. I'm Hélène. I'm an addict. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hélène.
It's my great pleasure to be inviting this person to come and share tonight. I met her when I first came to the meetings, really. I saw her pretty much every day on this meeting. I would go pretty much on a daily basis initially. And I'm so pleased that she's coming to share tonight. She's got a strong message. I only heard her share for short times, but regularly when I was going to that meeting, and always sharing that message, you know, of our fellowship, and especially as I asked her yesterday or the day before yesterday, I can't remember, and her response was, oh, well, of course, you know, that's what we do. We come and share the message. So I found it really inspiring. So thank you so much, Laura Beth. And without further ado, thank you for sharing with us.
Right. Hi. Thanks, Pauline. I could hardly hear you, to be honest with you, but thanks for the introduction. Yeah, thanks for taking the meeting, Steve, and thanks to everyone here and making it a meeting. Hi, I am Laura Beth, and I am a great, such a grateful addict today.
Hi, welcome.
Laura Beth. Hello, Beth, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah. But I'll start with my childhood, right? My using was higgledy-piggledy and all over the place, but I'll start with my younger years. At the age of three, I had an accident and fell out of a dorm attic bedroom window from 40 foot high. And I had a head injury because of this, which has left me with cerebral palsy, and I'm partially paralyzed on my right side. So due to this, and it affected my emotions as a child. The emotion part of my brain is damaged. This is what my mother's told me anyway. So I struggled at school fitting in, and because one side of me is disabled and the other side is not, I really, really found myself like I was in two parallel universes in one body, if that makes any fucking sense. Sorry, excuse my language. If anyone's offended, I'm really sorry. I've just got a foul mouth. But yeah, I really struggled to fit in. I really struggled to feel like a part of, even in primary school. And there was a girl in my class at primary school who had a disability as well. She's got autism, but she wore a caliper leg splint like I do, and we had the same support system, but I just felt worlds apart from her as well. And yeah, I tried to fit in, even with friends and family, you know, not in school, but people out of school. I found it really difficult to fit in with other people or big crowd of people because there was only so many people who understood me or knew my situation. But yeah, when I was 11, I started. My brother's 2 year older than me, so my brother and his mates used to buddy sneaking bottles of vodka at weekend, and we used to have parties down in my brother's room. It's drunk on vodka without, you know, my mum knowing, but my brother, but I feel we're doing it. My mum and dad were always in pubs, so we were left to our own devices, really. And then when I got to 13, right, my mates used to smoke weed on park, but then none of them had let me do it, obviously because of me being disabled and shit, you know. But one night I was babysitting my sister and a few of her friends, and two of my friends brought two lads around to my house, right? And I was sat there bored out of my head because my friends were making out with these two lads. And anyway, they give me a bit of a spliff, which was resin, dirt bar, whatever you want to call it. We called it a dirt bar, when I was 13. And I had a couple of drags on the spliff, and it blew my head off, and it numbed me. And I remember a couple of days later, I said, "I need a spliff." Not, "I want a spliff," or, "I could do with a spliff." I need a spliff. I used to love smoking weed and getting off my freaking face out in park. And then when I left high school and I got to 16, and I started hanging around with some other kids who I went to, started going to college with. But there was this one lass out of this group of friends who was in my year at high school, but we weren't close then. But we got close at this point. And I started taking pills with them, ecstasy pills and FET, speed. We called it FET. Freaking FET, the dirtiest drug on the planet, in my opinion. Dirtiest come down anyway. And for me, I was always getting myself involved in situations with boys, you know. Anyway, yeah, I was just an absolute nightmare. And I used to love taking pills. And then when I got to 17, I met this lad. And he said, "Oh, it's the me or the drugs." And I chose him. Right, 9 months later, I married this bloke. I was 18, right, and this guy was very abusive. I mean, mentally, emotionally, sexually, coercive, you name it, he did it. He was a nasty piece of work. But he used to, because I'm, like I said, I'm disabled and stuff, and I suffer with sciatica, he kept me doped up on tablets, on like pregabalin and stuff like that, just to control me. And I smoked weed with him, and I took FET with him, speed with him, even though he told me not to do fucking drugs and it choose him. I've got three kids to this bloke, biological kids. He don't have nothing to do with them. He hasn't for years. When I was 24, he left me for another woman 6 months after I'd give birth to our twin daughters. But this was the best thing that ever happened to me. But 3 months later, I met the love of my life. After I'd split up from my husband, and before I met this other guy, I was meeting guys off the internet and doing a lot of coke, doing a lot of drinking, sex with everyone, any bloke who come my way, you know, off the internet. And all I wanted to do was forget about stuff, and I wanted to block it all out and just meet sort of have that hit of gratification, that dopamine, whatever you want to call it. And my head, you know. And then I met the love of my life, James, sadly deceased now. Next month it'll be 8 years since he died. Absolute love of my life, he was my everything. But sadly, unfortunately, he was a heroin addict, right? And when we first met, I smoked crack with him one night. Day after, I gave him an ultimatum. I said, "It's that shit on me." Right? He was on a methadone script, right? And about 2 years later, he'd missed his script because he was poorly. And I threw him, about 5 days later, I'd seen him poorly for 5 days because they restarted him on his methadone. And I ended up throwing money at him. But if you need to use. He went, "Are you sure about that?" I said, "No, just do it anyway, because I can't stand to see you like this." A couple of days later, we're walking through Halifax Town Centre, and he's telling me how guilty he's feeling, and he wouldn't use if I didn't want him to. And I just went, "Do you know what? If it makes you feel any better, I'll have a pipe with you." And that was it. That was it. Yeah, about 6 months later after that, he ended up in hospital with endocarditis. His infection rate were off the freaking charts, and he was in hospital for 12 weeks, and he had open heart and lung surgery at Leeds Hospital, the LGI, and I was still taking crack into hospital for him and stuff. Still take, going in, going late at night in a taxi cost me 35 quid, cost me 70 quid there and back in a taxi. Absolutely horrendous. Just taking drugs over, and I was getting drugs, but I was using more drugs than he knew about, and he'd go off his head about it with me. 6 months later, after he got back off, he got home from hospital in October, and the following March, 28th of March, Wednesday, the 28th of March, half 8 in the morning, I'm laid in bed and I'm got because he was downstairs because he'd been poorly for about 9 days and I was absolutely exhausted. So I made him a bed upon the sofa. Next day, I'm shouting at him at half 8 in the morning, going, James, what time is it? No answer. What time is it? No answer. I went, you ignorant cunt. And I come downstairs and I found him dead on my living room floor, face down, and he was purple. And all of me just went in a fucking shock, and I just couldn't cope. And after that, I picked up my crack pipe and I hugged that. That was my comfort blanket, my safety net, and I felt safe. But after that, I started going into Halifax Town Centre using in bed sits on the game because I met a girl who were on the game. Fucking shoplifting, selling bottles of spirits that I'd nicked, or some random times we did like a chocolate run and nicked a load of fucking chocolate when it sold to this petrol, this garage. I don't, but my brain and my emotions and everything just shut down. And I kept trying. I got raped. I took a homeless guy in off the street who took the piss out of me. It was horrendous. I started going to this day recovery centre, and I'd get a week clean, I'd be off again. I'd bump into someone there, off again. I got 6 weeks clean, I got 42 days, and I thought I'd cracked it. Went in there, bumped into someone who going in for the script and went off and used with them. Right. When COVID started, when lockdown started, I was on a night time when I didn't have any money and I was bored. I used to go on a Zoom meeting just to pass time on or just something to do, some connection. And then if I'd got paid that night, I'd fuck off as soon as money went in. But I kept coming back, day clean, 2 days clean, 3 days clean, off again, week clean, off again. Like I said, I got 42 days clean, right? I got sexually assaulted. About 6 weeks later, I'm in the middle of my local town, with a mate stood outside this bar, and the guy who sexually assaulted me walked past me with his dog. I didn't realize it were him at first, and then I had a panic attack, right? I went home, I locked myself in the house for 30 days. I couldn't come out of the house, and if I did, I felt physically sick. I once got a bus into Halifax, getting a bus home, which is half an hour bus ride. I got off the bus halfway because I couldn't cope of how packed this bus was. So spoke to my GP, and my GP put me on some medication. And I felt better after that and realised I were 30 days clean. 3 days later, I hadn't done any Zoom meetings at that time because I couldn't. My head just wouldn't let me. I just couldn't physically and mentally cope with any connection with anyone else. It was just like, nope, off, not doing it. Anyway, yeah, I got 30 days clean and I'm like, wow. 3 days later, right? I got this niggling thought, this niggling in my head. Oh, sounds like a good idea. Use it now. You're feeling a lot better. No, let's back gets back on a Zoom meeting. So I got back on pajamas and chill, and I stayed on that meeting. Yeah, I did that meeting. Well, most nights, usually. Maybe 5 to 7 nights a week. I know it runs 7 nights a week, but sometimes I didn't go on it every night because I'm exhausted. But yeah, I've been through three sponsors. My first sponsor was a lady in America, and she was just, temporary sponsor, but she got me through first three steps. And there was on Pajamas Until Again, I found a lady who lives in Lincolnshire, and she sponsored me for 2.5 years, and I had a beautiful relationship with her. I still do. I'm not my sponsor anymore because she relapsed, sadly, beginning of last year. But we're still in touch. I still have that connection with her, and I do service on Zoom meetings. Last year, I set up a Zoom meeting called Disability and Recovery. And last summer, I was doing every Sunday, I was doing greeting at a face-to-face meeting, because I just needed to get out of the house and I needed to do something instead of just sitting on my ass. I mean, I'm a full-time mum and my daughter is homeschooled, so it's kind of difficult anyway, but I've always got time for me recovery. I always have a set time of day. I used to go on pajamas and chill every night, and I'd have my camera off and I'd sit and do my sponsor, just do my step work as I'm on this meeting. And I wouldn't say, oh, I'll do 6 questions. I just get on with it and see how much I can do until my vision had gone blurry or till I couldn't think anymore. And I find innit has saved my ass. It saved my bacon, and it's given me the chance to be a mum again. Because if I didn't have this recovery, I couldn't be a mum. I couldn't be a daughter. Me and my mum's relationship's got a lot better since I stopped using. Especially when it comes to financial things. I have a mobile phone contract in my mum's name. I use my mum's Littlewoods account. When I was using my PIP, my disability money, went into my mum's account, and then she'd pay the catalogue and pay me phone and give me the excess of it. Now I pay directly myself from my phone to my bank account to the catalogue and to the mobile phone contract, because she trusts me today. Today I've had a beautiful day with my children, right? I took my girls, like I said earlier, I took them when they got the nails done today. I got my hair done. We've got some face masks. We've got some bubble tea. And my daughter's obsessed with it. We went into a few shops and got face masks and stuff. And one of my daughters have got her a new pair of pajamas. And it's just, my life is just so done a 180 from where I was, to where I am now. I mean, I still wake up some days and I think I can't be arsed. But then I think if I push myself and just do it anyway, Laura Beth, you'll be happier and do it, especially when it comes to cleaning and stuff in the house. You'd be better, you'd be happier, and you'll feel good about it when you finished it. When in a day, when it's all done, you'll be happy about it, And it's just things have just gone from good to bad. Like, I fought for my kids in court, when I got clean, and this court thing took about 10 months. And the judge said to me when I was 10 months clean, she went, "Well done, Mrs. Eden." She went, "It's really a challenge to get where you are, so you should be really proud of yourself." And that cheered me up, and that just made me think, "Oh, well, yeah, recovery is worth it if I've got a judge telling me that I'm doing the right thing." I mean, I know I'm doing the right thing now. Some days I do have that niggling thought. If I suffer badly with depression, right, and I have, so I take antidepressants. If I don't take them, I am in a right state. And my kids have seen me some states crying on the floor, wanting to kill myself, wanting to freaking use drugs again, right? And my kids have got me through it. I'm not as bad as I was because I don't do that anymore. The medication that I'm on now is kind of stable. Because of my disability and sciatica and that, I have to take pregabalin, which I am very, very careful of and I'm very, very mindful of. I do not abuse, I use them as and when if needed, and I try my best to keep myself in a good place, especially emotionally. I pray, I meditate, I do just for today lists, service, step work, sponsorship. I have a sponsor, I have a sponsee who's an absolute pain in the backside. But I will persevere with her, and I will get her freaking through it. She forgets to call me, she doesn't even text me, which is really annoying. But I just want, to give someone else hope that you can get through it. You can get through anything and stay clean at the same time. Just stick with your fellowship. Call someone in recovery if you're struggling. At one point, if I went shopping, went to B&M Bargains, and it used to be right on the end of the street where I used to use in Halifax Town Centre, and I'd ring someone in recovery if I would go in there and speak to them because I just couldn't face it. Now it doesn't really bother me. If I go into Halifax, I see someone I used to use with, I can say hi and I can walk away. And it's just, I don't need to get personally involved with any of that because it's none of my business what they're doing, but, and I can't say, look, you're better off without drugs because you can't, it's attraction rather promotion and all that jazz. But for me, I just stay clean one day at a time. And I'm sorry if I've rambled, and I'm sorry if this doesn't make sense. And I hope someone's got something out of this. And thank you very much for having me. My name is Laura Beth, and I'm a grateful addict. Thank you.